threatening to change power companies in the Northeast. Is it all spark and no bite? From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. It is Tuesday, November 6th. We'll also reach out to Haiti, where Hurricane Sandy messed things up big time for the country's farmers. We will find out why pretty pictures are keeping one part of the publishing industry afloat. And there's one other big thing going on today. Why can't I think of it? All right, well, it'll come to me. Enjoy the show.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
More than a million people are still without power more than a week after Superstorm Sandy hit the Northeast. That has more than a few folks saying they are fed up with their power utilities. But what does it take for a community to actually change its electric company? Here's Marketplace's Dan Bobkoff.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is no longer Mr. Nice Guy when it comes to the region's power companies.
They're not in the Old Testament. They're not in the New Testament. God never said, New York shall have these utilities forever.
Cuomo is threatening to find other utilities if these companies like Con Ed and LIPA don't perform. But is that even practical? Ashley Brown heads Harvard's Electricity Policy Group. He says changing companies
is kind of like using a nuclear weapon.
Brown says there are things companies could do to reduce outages, but the public would have to pay.
Could we have a system that's 100% reliable? Well, I mean, I don't know if we get 100%, but we could probably improve reliability enormously. But that requires spending a lot of money.
It's common for elected officials to chastise power companies while residents wait for the lights to come back on. In the past, cities like Chicago have threatened to municipalize their privately owned utilities. But consultant Ken Rose says typically little comes of the rhetoric.
It may be that the company is asked later on to try to get its act together.
But in the end, they're probably not going anywhere. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff from Marketplace.
Now, before Sandy hit the East Coast, it made its way, as so many hurricanes do, through the poor countries of the Caribbean. Haiti got some of the worst of it. And Oxfam's Amélie Gauthier is with me now from the capital, Port-au-Prince. Hello to you.
Hi.
Here in the U.S., we measure the recovery in weeks or maybe months to clean up the damage and get people back in their homes. How do you measure it in Haiti?
Well, in Haiti, it's going to take much longer than the United States. The impacts of Sandy have been severe. We have seen the initial damage with like more than 10,000 houses that have been destroyed. People had to evacuate to these emergency shelters. But the most preoccupying for us, where we have the most concern, is because there has been massive loss in agriculture. So not only has there been Sandy, but previous this year there was a drought and there was also a tropical storm, Isaac, and now people have lost all of their capital. So when they see their seeds and their crops and their livestock, for them that's their capital and that's their saving that's been washed away by the storm.
I saw something like more than 90% of crops lost after all said and done.
Yes, this is accumulated with the impact of Isaac. So it's estimated that one quarter, for example, of the yearly production in bananas, which is a staple food here in Haiti, has been lost. And we can see already some increases in some markets of 60% of the price. And this is going to be very difficult for families to have sufficient food and to make ends meet.
So Haiti gets hit by storms. I mean, we know that at this point. It's just where it is in the world. Are there things that can and should change in the near term to lessen the amount of damage that is done?
Well, in the recent years, there was a storm and there was incredible loss, like 3,000 people. In 2008, there was also four storms and there was 800 people who died. This year, there was less than 100. This is still very tragic, but we can see that there's been improvements in protecting the lives of the people. What there still needs to be done is how to protect economic assets of the people so that when the storm hits, people are able to get back on their feet much quicker and the impacts do not linger on for weeks and months to come.
Oxfam's Amélie Gauthier from Haiti. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much to you.
All right, let's do the numbers. Well, this hour, markets are up. And in no small way on this election day. That's what it is. It's election day. Okay, the Dow is up more than 1% at this hour, 150 points. The S&P 500 is also up about 1%. The NASDAQ up 0.6%. No economic data releases heading our way today, kind of keeping election day holy, as it were. Office Max and Office Depot both saw sales fall in the third quarter, though both chains managed to contain the damage to profits by cutting costs. Falling demand for personal computers was the most critical factor. There is some hope that new machines running Windows 8 will bring more people into the stores before the year is out. Well, we've talked a fair bit about the uncertainty that's been hanging around the markets until tomorrow dawns with an election outcome. A lot of things Wall Street cares about hang in the balance. Healthcare, tax policy, the dreaded across-the-board spending cuts and tax hikes that they call the fiscal cliff. But what if that sweet, sweet certainty the election can deliver is not there when we wake up? I'm joined by my regular Tuesday guest, Julie Nieman, an analyst at Smith Moore & Company. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Jeff.
So it's going to be a narrow election, it looks like, and there's a possibility, of course, we might not have an outcome right away. What would that do for investors?
Well, if we don't have a winner tomorrow morning, the stock market drops like a rock, probably over 8%. This happened the last time with the Bush-Gore election. It was December before there was any resolution there. This is just more uncertainty. It keeps people in 0% savings accounts instead of investing in stocks. It keeps business and corporations sitting on cash instead of investing in business. Why? Because they can't see where any growth is going to come from. They can only see profits go up through cost-cutting, but that game's over. The issue is not taxes or health care. They just can't see any growth. Think Japan, 20 years of stagnation with no growth. And an election stalemate will keep this theme in place.
And quickly, Julie, let's talk about the fiscal cliff. Now, the line on the fiscal cliff generally seems to be, of course they'll work it out, because it's unthinkable that they would not. But you're a little more worried than some of us, huh?
Well, we think Congress certainly will do something during the lame duck session, but we saw this before in 2011 by voting down the continuing resolution. Congress is capable of being quite irrational. Our debt was downgraded. So now you've got $600 billion in tax increases, spending cuts become law automatically, it squashes business, consumer spending, markets plummet, the economy is already slowing, it goes back into recession, and there's little evidence that Congress is really getting the message. Wall Street thinks Congress will pass some extensions, kick the can down the road, just like your up in Greece. But first they need the big fiscal plan, which means voting for tax increases, just try getting reelected, and blaming each other for paralysis. So the lame duck could do that. That's the one space, or it could be retaliation time. I don't know. I've got that Wile E. Coyote feeling at the moment.
Julie Nieman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thanks.
You bet.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Stock markets closed higher in Europe today, despite protests that have erupted again around Greece before a critical vote in Parliament. The votes to pass a new austerity package are reportedly peeling off, which makes for a very uncertain situation there. Mark Lowen is the BBC's correspondent in Athens, and he's with me now. Hello, Mark.
Thanks, Jeff.
So tell me about the protests first. How worked up are they across Greece today?
Well, I have to say that today was actually the smallest and quietest demonstration that I can remember in Athens for many months. It was still several thousand strong, but usually what you have in these demonstrations is that once they arrive at Syntagma Square, the central square in Athens outside Parliament, there are clashes with the police, there are petrol bombs and tear gas, but actually today, none of that at all. Now, that belies the fact that actually they're all, frankly, furious about the next wave of spending cuts to come, this package of 13.5 billion euros, which will be voted through Parliament on Wednesday night. And in a country in which one in four people are now out of work, this nation really believes that they simply can't take any more.
What is it that hangs so critically on this austerity package getting through Parliament?
Well, it's really whether or not Greece can stay afloat, because remember, this country depends on huge international bailouts worth 240 billion euros. And in return for that money, the country must make very, very painful spending cuts. Now, if Greece does not vote through the austerity package tomorrow, Wednesday evening, and then the budget on Sunday, it won't get the next slice of its bailout. And the Prime Minister says that without that bailout money, Greece would go bankrupt. So really, it is a very, very vital radical vote indeed, and it hangs by a thread because the third party in the three-party coalition says it will not back the austerity package because it objects to some cuts in the labour market. However, it is still expected just to scrape through by a handful of votes, perhaps as small a majority as 4 or 5 MPs.
If it does pass, what are the effects that people are so fearful of?
Well, the retirement age is set to rise from 65 to 67. There will be massive cuts to pensions, the fifth consecutive cut to pensions of between 5 and 15% per person. Public sector salaries will be cut, healthcare spending slashed, and benefits as well. And so really a huge package of savings. And that, of course, comes on top of very, very swingeing cuts that the Greek people have gone through over the last couple of years. And so people here now are pretty desperate.
An update from the BBC's Mark Lowen in Athens. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
It's no big economic secret that paper and ink publishing is struggling as e-readers transform the way that we read. But a recent deal sheds a little light on one traditional publishing niche that's hanging in there. If you're home lounging on the sofa right now, enjoying a little bit of coffee or something, you might be looking at it as we speak. Marketplace's Mark Garrison explains.
A private equity billionaire recently bought the London publisher Fiden. It publishes coffee table books, big, beautiful, expensive art books, the kind sold in museums and specialty bookstores. They're $50 or much more for special editions. Michael Coffey of Publishers Weekly says these are good times for lush, handsome books.
The appeal of art books and coffee table books today is getting stronger and stronger as books dematerialize in the digital space. The art book stands out more and more as an object.
Vast color photos, thick paper, sturdy binding, iPad and Kindle can't compete. It's why people who may read novels digitally still pay up to place trophy volumes on their coffee tables. Ellen Fisher is dean of the New York School of Interior Design.
There's something about the level of detail, the color rendition, and the simple artistry of a really well-done coffee table book that can tie a whole room together and bring it to another place.
This is a hotel collection, a hotel.
Jenny McKibben of the New York bookstore Strand also knows it takes more than a rug to really tie a room together. Designers hire her to choose interesting works for their spaces. Her current client is a hotel. The vivid imagery of coffee table books is perfect.
When somebody has 5 to 10 minutes and they're sitting in the lobby, they're not getting engrossed in a book, but they're just having something beautiful to look through.
That beauty, expensive and irreplaceable by a digital book, is what's keeping coffee table books healthy, even while life is pretty ugly for publishing. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Okay, winding down here. You know those little stop signs that pop out from the sides of school buses, right? Well, you're supposed to stop. It doesn't matter which way on the street you're going. You're supposed to stop. Kids could be crossing. Lest you wonder just how seriously these things are taken in a court of law, witness the creative sentencing of a woman in Cleveland. She took her SUV up on a sidewalk to drive around a parked bus. No kids were in danger. The whole thing is on video. The bus driver got a cell phone out and caught it in video, so it's more amusing than anything, at least to the bus driver. But the woman's penalty includes now 2 mornings standing at the site of her infraction wearing a sign that reads, quote, "Only an idiot drives on the sidewalk to avoid a school bus. Honk if you support school bus safety." Nice to know in 2012, people can still do things stupid enough that they make you wear a sign. And not stopping for school buses is kind of an unsettling note to end on. So let's finish with some inspiration for you from a new iPhone app that launched last week and quickly shot to the top of the iPhone app charts. $3 will buy you Chateauetry, the official poetry app of William Shatner. You can choose from hundreds of words, adjust them on your screen to affect the emphasis and the timing, and then you press the ChatVat button to hear them delivered by Captain Kirk in his signature way. YouTube is filling up with people sharing their deep thoughts. Here's a little affirmation posted by somebody named Ryan Carty to help send you on your way today.
I am a precious, precious star. Wonderful me.
And with that, go out there, everybody, and take on the universe. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.